Friends, put your seatbelts on. It's going to get very intense in here.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, I've been in some intense prayer today, tremendously burdened by the subject matter of today's broadcast. So give me your best ear, whatever you can do to concentrate on the things I'm going to share and evaluate for yourself. It's going to be worth your time. Bottom of the hour, I'm going to be joined by a guest who is a black actor and producer in an interracial marriage. And he and his wife work together for racial reconciliation. So we want to get wisdom, healing on the broadcast today, as well as start off with some serious warning. If you want to weigh in on the things I'm sharing, number to call 866-34-TRUTH, but I'm not taking random Bible questions or anything like that today. All right. I have been shouting out two things in recent weeks. One is to say, yes, 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 Black Lives Matter. And I want to explain in a moment to some of my white friends who may not know why it's so important to shout that out, why I'm shouting that out. At the same time, I have been giving warnings about the official Black Lives Matter movement and organization and saying it is not something you want to be part of as a follower of Jesus. Now, I posted this on Facebook and Twitter last night so I could be as loud and clear as possible. I said this: Black Lives Matter, all caps. Every black life matters, all caps. All black lives matter, all caps. Black lives do matter, all caps. God himself affirms that black lives matter, all caps. Then in small letters, and the BLM organization is dangerous, anti-Christian, and should be avoided. Have I made myself clear? Now, here's the perspective. Many white Christians answer with, yeah, but all lives matter. So let's think of this. It's during the Holocaust. You are Corrie ten Boom and her family. You are rescuing Jews fleeing from a death sentence by the Nazis. And someone says to the ten Boom family, why do you risk your lives to save these Jews? And they say, Jewish lives matter. What if the people said, well, Dutch lives matter, well, German lives matter, well, all lives matter? That would be missing the point, because the ones that are particularly endangered there would be Jewish lives. In the same way, through American history, it has often been the national mentality that black lives matter less, or black lives don't matter at all. And many in the black community feel that is still often the attitude, and therefore it is important to affirm and say, yes, black lives matter, period. At the same time, there is an organization which has specific goals, specific direction, and as I will open up to you in a moment, is coming from a very, very different spirit. In fact, this may shock you with what I'm going to say, but I'm going to tie this in with the spirit of Jezebel in a moment. Okay, let's look at this headline. ABC News says this: from the start, Black Lives Matter has been about LGBTQ lives. Two of three Black Lives Matter founders identify as queer. That's well known. That's an open secret. And prioritizing LGBTQ issues has been of high priority to the Black Lives Matter movement. So we'll just say BLM to separate that from the statement that Black Lives Matter. So the three founders of BLM are all women, obviously gifted, obviously great communicators, visionary, strategists. They've obviously got a lot going for them to be as effective as they are and to have galvanized a movement the way that they have. So credit to them for what they have done in terms of their abilities, but it's a shame in terms of much of what they are standing for. So let's take a look what they actually say about themselves, who these women are, what their ideologies are. So Patrice Khan Colors, one of the co-founders, a 2015 video clip, and we'll look at a headline in a moment. She described herself as a trained Marxist. She also came out as queer as a teenager. Her words, queer, okay? So that's Patrice Khan Colors. I just want you to understand her background, her thought. And these are major issues and statements. Then Alicia Garza, also identified as a, quote, queer black woman. This is on the official site. She says, we must view this epidemic, police brutality, etc., through a lens of race, gender, sexual orientation, and gender identity. This is not just about black. This is about black, queer, black, trans, black, gay, black, lesbian, right at the top of the list. And then the third one, Opal Tometi, and I may not be pronouncing each name exactly right. She is described as a transnational feminist and a student of liberation theology. Okay? A student of liberation theology. New York Post article, but widely reported in the news. Video in 2015. Again, Patrice Cullors, Black Lives Matter co-founder, describes herself as trained Marxist. No surprise given the ideology. Then Acton Institute a few years ago did a major article. It's worth looking at, worth reading. The Marxist Roots of Black Liberation Theology. Now, liberation theology in general is not just Jesus came to set people free. Oh, no, no. Much, much more than that. And yes, it is clearly Marxist ideology. And then black liberation theology is decidedly Marxist theology. So BLM has clear Marxist ideology in its roots and very, very aggressively, very, very clearly radical feminist and radical trans queer activism. So let's look at their actual statement. Let's go to the website and let's look at the statement, what we believe, all right? And I want to highlight a few things on the statement. And we won't scroll through all of it, but everything I'm saying is directly from the current website statement. This is not an outside report. This is what's actually there. Let me highlight a few things to you. There are three references to mothers. We don't need that on the screen now. There are three references to mothers in the document. There are zero, as in none. There are no references to fathers. Not a single one. Not a single mention of fathers in the document. Mothers are mentioned, parents are mentioned, but not a single mention of fathers. Where man is mentioned, or anything patriarchal, it is negative. Here, let me read some of the statements. We make our spaces family-friendly and enable parents to fully participate with their children. We dismantle the patriarchal practice that requires mothers to work double shifts so that they can mother in private even as they participate in public justice work. So the patriarchal practice is that the man doesn't really work the way the wife works, as opposed to they have a shared life with shared responsibilities. No, patriarchal, that's bad, all right? And then reference to men, and it says this. It speaks of women who are in an impressive male environment. I'm just going through the document. There are four references to trans. Four. Not a single reference to fathers. Any reference to men, patriarchal, negative. Okay? Four references to trans. We make space for transgender brothers and sisters to participate and lead. We are self-reflexive and do the work required to dismantle cisgender privilege. This is not just white privilege, but cisgender privilege. In other words, heterosexual privilege. They want to dismantle that and uplift black trans folk, especially black trans women who continue to be disproportionately impacted by trans antagonist violence. There's also reference to, look at this, actual or perceived sexual identity, gender expression. So that's even more trans-related issues. And then one more reference to queer along the way. And as for heterosexuality, cisgender privilege comes against that. We foster a queer-affirming network When we gather, we do so with the intention of freeing ourselves from the tight grip of heteronormative thinking. So heterosexuality, heteronormative thinking, that the norm is to be heterosexual, all this is to be opposed as a foundational mindset of the BLM movement. Friends, this is why we have been sounding the alarm as loudly as we have. The only reference to religious beliefs is religious beliefs or disbeliefs. Can't even just say religious beliefs or disbeliefs. Everyone, welcome. Now, let's take this a little further. The spirit of radical feminism, the spirit of queer theology, the spirit of Marxist liberationism, these are all foundational to the BLM movement, which identifies as a movement. It is an organization. It has branches. It is not just a theory or a concept. So we separate the cause of justice. We separate the affirmation that Black Lives Matter from the BLM movement. I was doing a radio interview a couple weeks ago, and the interviewer wanted to talk to me about my book, Jezebel's War with America. Jezebel's War with America came out last August. And when it came out, it sold out. The first printing sold out the first week. I never had that happen with any book that I wrote. And somehow, the dots were connected. When you look at the table of contents for the book, when you look at the table of contents, you can see that we bring together the spirit of radical feminism, addiction to pornography, Shout Your Abortion movement, the attack on men, the emasculating of men. In addition to that, the war on gender. One thing after another, saying the same demonic forces that operated through Queen Jezebel of old, 3,000 years ago, those same demonic forces are operating today. Connect the dots. The interviewer said to me, how do you think that ties in with the riots and everything that's happening with Donald Trump and so on? And first glance, well, it's unconnected. What do the riots have to do with that? But at second glance, of course it's connected, because at the heart of the BLM movement is a radical feminist, even man-hating spirit. And that in particular rises up against an alpha male like Trump. So he creates enough problems on his own with his misogyny in the past and things like that. On the other hand, there is a concerted radical feminist effort to take Trump down. What does BLM say about taking Trump down? Stay tuned.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Another reminder, bottom of the hour, I'll be joined by Craig Brown. He is an African-American actor and producer in an interracial marriage, and he and his wife working hard to promote racial reconciliation. So let me connect the dots for you one more time. The spirit of radical feminism, the Shout Your Abortion movement, the attack on gender identity, the emasculating of men, the seduction into porn, the rise in witchcraft, all these things we identify with Jezebel, not with a person or a ghost, but the same demonic powers that work through Jezebel work today. And they are at work in a concerted way in America. And when you have a man like Trump, who is an alpha male and like a bull in a china shop, on the one hand, many women will not like him because of his past, his playboy past and his narcissism and things like that. But there is also a spiritual attack against him, a Jezebelic attack, which led some of the contributes to some of the ferocity and intensity of it. So when you see everything coming together, this Jezebelic spirit, and now the riots, we're separating this from the righteous causes of Black Americans. We're separating this from the righteous concerns of Black Americans. We're talking about the spirit of lawlessness and chaos and anarchy and the direct assault on the president in the midst of it. I'm saying it ties in with the Jezebelic spirit, and that Jezebelic spirit is at the heart of the BLM movement. Radical, feminist, queer, exalting, pro-trans, anti-patriarchal, anti-nuclear family, in many ways anti-male movement. And that's what we must see and separate ourselves from. Listen to what Patrice Cullors, one of the co-founders, again, self-identified Marxist, queer, liberation theology person, all right? Listen to what she has to say about the presidential elections.
A lot of criticism of former Vice President Joe Biden from civil rights activists. The election obviously will be a choice. How do you think Biden matches up compared to President Trump when it comes to these issues that are important to you?
Well, hands down, Trump not only needs to not be in office in November, but he should resign now. Trump needs to be out of office. He is not fit for office. And so what we are going to push for is a move to get Trump out, while we're also going to continue to push and pressure Vice President Joe Biden around his policies and relationship to policing and criminalization. That's going to be important. But our goal is to get Trump out.
Loud and clear. The goal is to get Trump out. Friends, there is a larger agenda afoot. And I encourage you, stand for the truth that Black Lives Matter. Stand for racial reconciliation. Stand for biblical justice. And separate yourself from the Jezebelic BLM movement. All right, before I go to the phones, and I will momentarily, there's an article by Tim Pierce on Daily Wire today that got my attention. And it says, health experts grappling with double standard between anti-lockdown and BLM protests. So when we have the economic lockdown, shutdown, there were people gathering in the streets and protesting, and no, you can't do this. Dangerous, dangerous. Shut it down. Dangerous. Get off the streets. You're going to spread the virus. And then next thing, we have the BLM protests and riots, and well, they're okay. Look at this. Look at this. 1,300 epidemiologists. That's, I don't know how many there are in America, but that's a sizable number. They signed a joint statement saying that here, it was important for the protesters to be out because, quote, white supremacy is a lethal public health issue that predates and contributes to COVID-19. You talk about double standards. And then Mayor de Blasio, he said, look, BLM protesters were fighting, quote, an extraordinary crisis that outweighed the threat of the coronavirus and is more important than reopening struggling businesses or allowing devout individuals to return to houses of worship. He said, when you see a nation, an entire nation, simultaneously grappling with an extraordinary crisis seen in 400 years of American racism, I'm sorry, that is not the same question as the understandably aggrieved store owner or the devout religious person who wants to go back to services. What an extraordinary double standard. On a daily basis, the store owner who's worked for 30 years and is about to lose his business, and the people who love God, for whom gathering together in services is essential to them just like breathing, and the families that are massively hurt and people depressed because they can't get out, all right? Those issues are just as real as the issue of police brutality. Those issues are just as real. And in fact, while a protest could wait to make a point, if your livelihood is about to be lost because you can't open your store, that's even more urgent. So it's the double standard. Why? It's the spirit of the world. It's the spirit of the world, friends. I've been saying this. It is not that suddenly tens of millions of Americans have become awakened to issues of racism. It is not that suddenly all of America understands something it didn't understand before. Because I guarantee you, the wealthy elites that are shouting on the BLM movement, when it comes to their neighborhood, or when they say, how about dividing the wealth because you got your money through white supremacy, I don't think they're going to be sharing it. I think there are some Americans, a minority, who really understand better now. And they're understanding what their Black friends have been trying to tell them for years. They see it now. They see American history through a little bit different light. Not that we discard the history or trash it, but we recognize it's more mixed than sometimes we'd like to believe. Okay, so That's happened. But the majority that are throwing themselves in, it's not because they have a passion for righteousness and are really going to stand with their black friends when the rubber meets the road. I don't believe that at all. I believe they're caught up in the spirit of the world, in the spirit of the age, in the spirit of anarchy. And that's why so many are doing what they're doing. And that's why even health professionals are making stupid statements. Well, what can I say? I told the protesters with the shutdown to stay in, but the protesters for police brutality, I tell them to march. Yeah, it's inconsistent. It's not because suddenly, please hear me, my black Christian friends, it's not because suddenly all these Americans are really going to stand with you and change their views 5 or 10 years from now. I wish it was the case. I wish it was the case, but I don't believe it is. Just being honest with you. And let's do what we can as followers of Jesus to promote racial reconciliation and to stand for biblical justice. Let's do what we can, but do not rely on the BLM movement to do it for you. The results will not be what you want them to be. All right, been as loud and clear as I can on that. Let's go over to Oklahoma. Eugene, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Good afternoon, Dr. Brown. Thank you for having me. And
sure thing.
First and foremost, I do appreciate your ministry, and I do agree 100% with the comments you made about BLM. I believe the movement is incredibly liberal, toxic, and deceiving, so I agree wholeheartedly. But when I first joined in, just listening to what you have to say in the beginning of your show today, I wanted to submit to you like the reason why I'm a black man, but I don't really side with the comments of saying Black Lives Matter in this particular context. You gave an example of like the Holocaust, and I agree completely. But the reason why I don't really say that type of comment of posting on my Instagram of Black Lives Matter is because people keep acting as if black people are actually disproportionately being discriminated against or being killed by police officers, and that's what I don't really agree with. For example, according to the FBI statistics, 9 unarmed black men were killed last year by police officers, and I believe it was 19 white men were killed by police officers. So the reason why I don't really say that statement is because I don't believe we're really at threat by anything in this nation. And I just kind of wanted to see what you thought about that. Maybe that's why some Christians are still not really...
I understand. Number one, I keep shouting the distinction between the movement and the message. And it's so important to do that. And also, you as a black man have more right to speak to the issue of black America than I do as a white man, just in terms of life experience, just like I can speak to anti-Semitism better than a non-Jew can, or discrimination against believers. I can speak to that better than a non-believer. And yeah, I'm aware of the statistics. And of course, Heather McDonald's research has said that there's not disproportionate violence against black offenders when compared to white offenders, etc. I understand all that. What I would say is, though, that it's still harder in America overall to be black as opposed to white. That whatever the reasons, the legacy of the past, slavery, segregation, has brought us to a point where the playing field's still not the same. Wealth accumulation, not distribution, or things like opportunities and so on. So from what I could tell, just as I've researched and read, or the average income for a black family, or savings, or just for whatever reason, things are the way they are, I do know that many black Americans still feel as if their lives don't matter to white Americans. So for me, Eugene, As I interact with millions of people literally on social media, and I see the importance in the years of my black brothers and sisters for me to make the affirmation that Black Lives Matter, and for them to understand that that does matter to me as a brother and as a follower of Jesus, as an American, then I will make that statement and then plainly and clearly separate from the movement and some of the ideology of the movement. So it's how we respond, it's who we're trying to communicate to. And if someone says, hey, I needed to hear that, that was helpful to hear you say that, and enough people say it, it's like, okay, it looks like it needs to be said, but it's a conversation to have, is it not, Eugene? All right, we'll talk more. God bless you, brother.
want, for fire we
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, we can't rely on the world to fix the problems in our nation. Certain things society's going to deal with and so on. You got a road that needs repair. You expect the local community to repair that. You have some issue with water supply at your house. You don't call the pastor. You call the local water company. I understand that. But the deeper issues, the life and death issues, the moral, cultural issues can only be solved in a lasting way with the church leading the way. And in that spirit, I want to bring my guest on, Craig Brown, actor, film producer, a recent movie, God's Fool. We'll talk about that in a moment. Raised on the east side of Detroit, married to Caitlin. And Craig is a black American. His wife is not. It's an interracial marriage. And they have a podcast, YouTube channel, sorry, called Brown Brown. Hey, Brown, that's a great name, right? Brown Brown, that focuses on repairing race relationships through their faith in Jesus and their interracial marriage. Hey, Craig, welcome to the Line of Fire. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So Craig, tell me about your acting and this God's Fool movie.
So God's Fool is a modern day storytelling of the story of Saint Francis of Assisi. Basically, I play a character who is at odds with his dad in the world. He's a billionaire and he's trying to figure out the meaning of life, and he kind of walks the same road as Saint Francis, by giving up his whole life for the sake of the gospel and feeding the poor. And yeah, so it's a great story about just giving up your life for Jesus.
And Craig, when I watched the trailer, I was intrigued by that. How did you feel as a follower of Jesus playing that role? I mean, how much were you putting yourself into it and thinking about the meaning of life while doing it?
Yeah, it was really tough. It was really tough. But also beautiful at the same time. As I was acting throughout the movie, there was a lot of questioning of myself as well as father and husband. What does it really look like to live a life that's sold out for Jesus? And just asking those same questions in an honest way, and not doing my best to not beat myself up, but also taking on Jesus' yoke and following him and trusting his leadership. As I'm playing that character, it was definitely challenging, but at the same time, it was beautiful.
Craig, I read about some famous actor. He had just finished a zombie movie, and something happened in an airport, and he got into a violent confrontation, and they said he had been in this role for so long that he kind of lost track of himself. I mean, that's how they justified it. But there's got to be something where you're really putting yourself into it, especially when you're sympathetic to the message. When is this coming out?
Oh, the movie is actually out now.
Okay, great.
You can you can watch it at ragamuffinrentals.com. So it's out there for the world to see.
All right, so Craig, tell me about your own life experience and what you as a black American Christian went through marrying a non-black American Christian.
Yeah, so it's very interesting. So before I met Kay, I was actually in a relationship with someone who was white, and her dad actually had a problem with my race. And after that, I basically vowed to never date outside of my race. Just dealing with that pain and that heartache, I'm like, I just don't want to walk that road. And eventually, I met my wife, Caitlin, who was drop-dead gorgeous. So all of those thoughts went right out of the window when I met her. And as I pursued her, and it was still rough because not knowing like, I just don't want to deal with that pain, just knowing, like, her background growing up in a Christian household, in a conservative family, white in the suburbs. I just knew my chances were probably high of receiving that kind of experience again. However, it was completely different. I was received with love by her family and of course, by her as well. And from there, I mean, life has just been phenomenal with, like, these two worlds coming together that's drastically different. Like, I grew up in a deep inner city of Detroit, ultra-liberal, you know, city that has its own, baggage as well with race. And then meeting someone who's obviously race of me and eventually marrying him, I had some concerns there. But as we continue to trust Jesus throughout that, throughout the pursuit of our relationship, things have just been fantastic. We have four daughters now, Tallulah, Windsor, Remington, and Sinclair.
Those are cool names, man. Very cool names. So Craig, in your view, as you are seeing the tensions dividing our nation, on the one hand, people recognizing things from a black point of view they might have seen before, on the other hand, things potentially being overstated or stated in divisive ways, how racist do you think America is as a country?
I think America has great intentions to not be racist, but it all comes down to a sin thing, man. We're just all messed up and broken, and we need Jesus, right? So everyone's kind of operating from, like, that worldview. So with that being said, I'm really slow to call anyone racist because that's very loaded. But America as a whole definitely has a lot of work to do. I think there's some big steps being taken in order to really address, the racist issues that we have in our country. But naming America as a whole as a racist country, I don't think that's accurate.
Got it. All right. So as you and Caitlin, interracial couple, are working together for racial reconciliation, what type of reception do you get within the church? And then where do you find resistance in either black or white communities?
Yeah, so within our community, we're widely accepted. We don't see many scenarios where we're discriminated against or anything like that. We live in Cincinnati, Ohio, and the diversity is there. So in regards to overt racism, we don't receive much of it. However, there are times that's challenging for my wife when she's out with our four mixed girls and everyone, who are a lot of other moms assuming that they aren't her kids. So sometimes she deals with stuff as simple as that. Or if me driving around by myself, getting pulled over for no other reason than just driving. We definitely experience it here and there, but it's definitely not as intense as other parts of the country, of course. So we're kind of lucky in that sense.
And what did you grow up with, Craig? You mentioned the environment in Detroit. What attitudes did you grow up with that could have been racist attitudes or hateful attitudes that had to be overcome?
Yeah, absolutely. So, growing up in Detroit, predominantly a black city, very liberal. And within my family, racism was kind of squashed. My family really didn't allow any type of hate talk. However, there was still this caution that we were taught to have being black in America towards white people, which ultimately can stir up racism, being cautious of, you know, another race. That's even though that was set with love. In the end, I mean, that causes a racist mindset as well. So, yes, so growing up in Detroit, I mean, Detroit has a big problem with race. I mean, still today, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the dividing line of 8 Mile in Detroit. Basically, what that does, separates the suburbs of Detroit and the inner city of Detroit. So I could be totally fine on one side of 8 Mile. Then going across the other side, I may receive a little more attention because of my race. So, yes, definitely growing up in a predominantly black city and definitely more the liberal side, there's definitely some strong, harsh thoughts that I've had toward people who are white just because of ignorance. Nothing more than just plain ignorance.
Yeah, and of course, ignorance goes all the way around on each different side, and that's why it's talking, communicating. But, you know, there are little questions people could ask themselves. Like if you say, well, there's nothing racist in me. So let's say you're a white person and you've got an emergency appointment with a doctor, kind of real critical situation. How would you feel if it was a black doctor? Or reverse it. You know, you're black, it's a white. You know, just little things people don't even realize. And it's not a matter of being haters. There are haters out there on all sides. We recognize that. But absolutely. Sometimes it's a matter of just getting to know people. And I think on the one hand, what happens now with the protests and the riots, there can be greater awareness to discuss issues. On the other hand, there can be things that are so extreme that it pushes people away. And what I've been shouting out is don't let the extreme voices pull us away from real issues. So, Craig, we come back. I want to chat with you about practical ideas, things that you talk about on your YouTube channel with your wife, Caitlin. What can we do as the church to lead the way in racial reconciliation, in pursuing what's best for one another in our society? You know, when it comes to politics and voting, obviously that's a whole volatile thing. We'll put that aside for the moment. But if we love God and we love our neighbor, then bottom line is, okay, what can we do? Thank God for beauty, diversity, differences, all that. We're not all trying to be the same. But what positive steps can we take? Are you doing it in your local church? Are you doing it in your community? Are you doing it in social media? How can we be part of the answer rather than just criticizing the wrong stuff in the society and the crazy movements on all sides? How can we be part of the answer? We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So check out the movie. I'm looking at the write-up here, God's Fool. Watch the trailer with Craig Lamar Brown, as he's credited there. Influenced by the life of St. Francis of Assisi, and to become a fool for God, a fool in the eyes of the world, but making eternal choices that make a whole lot of sense. Craig, on your YouTube channel with your wife, Caitlin, what are some of the things you do, and then in general ministry work, to promote racial reconciliation?
Yeah, so what we're doing on the channel is basically just opening up our lives and just having those tough conversations from both perspectives. Her being growing up as a white conservative Christian in the suburbs, and me growing up in the inner city of Detroit, black liberal, basically just coming together and saying, hey, like, let's throw out our political ideas for the sake of love for one another, which is something that we had to do in order to let our marriage flourish. So taking those ideas, setting them aside, and really looking at one another with love, and encouraging all of the viewers to do the same thing, and ultimately to confess sin in that area of racism, both with me and her as well. I mean, this is still stuff that we try to work throughout our lives today. So yeah, it's the whole goal of it is to have a positive conversation. There's enough bickering on the internet and social media. We wanted to create a place where people felt safe in order to have those discussions and to be encouraged by the Holy Spirit.
And Craig, you've listened to the broadcast here. You know me through that. We've never met. Mm-hmm. I'm actually looking for an opening and an acting. No, just messing with you.
I got you, man. Let's do it.
Yeah. But you know that I agree that you got to have the open conversations. And yeah. One of the things I say out front is, look, let's just put it out on the table. You speak your mind even if it offends me. Just say what you need to say. And then once I've listened to you, if I've earned the right, then let me share my perspective. But, you know, if we beat around issues, and I've even recommended in multiracial churches where one thing you can't really talk about is politics. You can talk about issues, but not politics, because the voting is like all over the place. I said, why not have a forum where someone from a different ethnicity or color or background explains why they vote the way they vote. Now, you may end up still differing, but a lot of white Christians look at how black Christians vote and think, how could you read the Bible and do that? And then the black Christian looks at the white Christians, how can you read the Bible and do that? Well, then let's talk about it then. Let's explain why and how and at least understand each other. Isn't that a big step, just understanding one another's perspectives?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I didn't understand the perspective of my wife until I started hanging around people who were white. I mean, like, I just didn't get it then. But now, as like I'm in her world, or as we're around each other, it's like, oh, okay, like I get it now. It's not all for the sake of hate that I vote a certain or I vote a certain way, and it's not for the sake of you know, in improving one race over the other. Like, that's not the case. Sometimes, like, it's how we're raised, and it could be as simple as that, or you try to align your politics with what the Bible says, with what you think is right, and you try to live from that. And I think the problem is that we've gotten to a point where we put politics above what above the word of God, and that's not okay. And what that does, it causes more division instead of inclusion.
Yeah. Hey, so if folks want to check out your YouTube channel, obviously, again, check out the movie God's Fool with Craig Brown. And if they want to check out your YouTube channel, is that the exact name they look for, Brown Brown?
Yep, Brown Brown. So a funny story, my wife's maiden name is Brown. So,
are you
when
serious?
We get married, her name, yeah.
The you gotta be kidding me.
No, not at all. Her poor girl's name didn't change, so unfortunately, she's a Brown for life.
That is funny.
So the name Brown Brown has people assume that it has something to do with race or, like, you know, our family being a multiracial family. Like, it has nothing to do with that. My last name is Brown, and her last name Brown, and
yeah,
because I didn't know that she got married, so Brown Brown.
That's fun. So she's Caitlin Brown Brown, to be technical.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I looked at the name and I didn't get it either. I thought, okay, Brown. Why isn't it two colors? Or, Nancy was Gurian when we met, and she had to exchange the beautiful last name of Gurian for Brown. So. Caitlin didn't step down with the name. Hey, Craig, one of these days we'll get to meet face-to-face, but keep doing what you're doing, man.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
All right. God bless you. Bye-bye. All right. I'm going to grab a few calls. That was fun talking to Craig, getting to meet him. But I just noticed a comment by a gentleman named Bilal on Facebook, and he asked the question, you know, how can you have unity if whites look at black as inferior citizens? Or if blacks look at white as inferior citizens, or if Gentiles look at Jews as inferior, or if Jews look at Gentiles. Every circle I've been in, anywhere around the world, any ethnicity, any group, you have people who think of their race or their group as superior. Now, I know black Americans have been pushed down through much of our history, I understand that. But all the circles I've worked in within the Lord, there's been an equality. There's been an esteem. There's been an honoring. There's been a recognition. There hasn't been a looking at someone as second class at all. I mean, the thought's not occurring in the many godly circles in which I've traveled. And you know, when I go to India every year, you have marriages that mess with the culture. I mean, really mess with the culture, because you have a high caste person marrying an untouchable. But they're both saved. It's like, no, that's a scandal. Well, through the gospel, it can change. So where we have these attitudes, for whatever reason, let's bring them to the cross, and let's demonstrate unity in Jesus before the eyes of a watching world. And where we see issues that need attention, that need correcting, let's work together to bring about godly solutions. All right, let me see if I can grab a call or two. Thesla, thanks so much for holding in Nebraska. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, yes, I would like to comment on, and I agree with the last caller that he said that, I don't so much agree with the statement that living as a black American is harder than a white American.
Okay.
I think that it's actually moving to the opposite side. I in school experienced bullying for being white.
Mm-hmm.
And people will call me basic for my skin color. And I was born in Honduras. So just for being white, they would be racist against me. And they will call me weak. They will even say black people were more beautiful because they were exotic. So, and I feel like things are moving, turning around, not in a good way, because the movement that is pushing against the racism from the past, they're doing it in the wrong way. For example, today,
the Democratic Party has
a rule for their caucus to hire, to prioritize minority people in their hiring. So you're not prioritizing because of qualifications, but because of race or skin color. So, and not just that.
Right. So then someone else that's qualified. Yeah. Let me just jump in, only because I'm right towards the end of the broadcast. Okay. I want to make sure I can interact with you. Number one, there's no question that some of the fight against racism is racist from another angle. In other words, you can't defeat racism with racism. The old Dr. King quote, you know, darkness can't drive out darkness. Hatred can't drive out hatred. You know, only love can drive out hatred. And only light can drive out darkness. There's no question about that. And there's no question that there is a push to make you feel guilty if you're white, or that there's something wrong with you if you're white. There's no question that exists. Just put it in a larger context, though, of a nation that is still predominantly white, and a history in which, you know, right until the 60s, segregation was still legal in much of America. Even with the tremendous fight to end slavery in America, the costly fight to end slavery, many wanted to end slavery but still not establish a system of equality. So there's no question that things are going in a dangerous direction, because they're based on hatred and racist driven in the wrong direction. But the history has been such, you're an immigrant here, right, from Honduras, and now you have your own obstacles to overcome as an immigrant to America that can be rejected as Hispanic or whatever. But the fact is, the history is such that the imbalance of where the racism has been very, very heavily white racism against blacks. Certainly, there are blacks that will be anti-white. We understand that. But so that's why the solution can't be racism drives out racism. The solution must be racial reconciliation, and biblical justice drives out racism. Hey friends, remember to stand with us. If you're watching on Facebook, you can click to donate. The same on YouTube, the dollar sign at the bottom of the screen. A whole lot to talk about. Go to our website, askdrbrown.org. Take advantage of all the resources there.